As for those implants, meet John Rogers, Professor of Materials Science at the University of Illinois, on how they're making devices that kind of dissolve in your body.
The relevance here, or the context, is that, you know, integrated circuit technology that exists today is only in the form of rigid planar chips. And that kind of technology is much different than biology. So the challenge then in material science is to create an integrated circuit that looks like biological tissue in the sense of an ability to stretch, curve, and laminate onto complex surfaces. So the way that we've done it, thinking about how to use silicon, which is the conventional material already very well known and understood, use it in unusual ways. It's really two steps. One, make the silicon extremely thin by comparison to a silicon wafer. And just by doing that, you create a material that can bend very easily just because it's so thin. And bending is good, but it's still not everything that you would want for a biointerface. You would like something that not only bends but stretches as well. So to accommodate the stretching, we integrate those thin silicon sheets with a rubber substrate to provide the elasticity, but we don't integrate it just in a planar format. We actually create rippled or wavy structures of the silicon, integrate that with the rubber, and then when the substrate is deformed, stretched back and forth, the silicon wavy structures can change to accommodate that deformation without cracking the silicon. Those are the basic ideas, and then there are lots of engineering elaborations on top of those ideas that allow you to do lots of very sophisticated things in thin, stretchy forms.
And these devices are tiny. It's not as if you're being asked to put a fuse box up your arm or tummy. This is nano stuff.
So it's about 100 nanometers in thickness, the silicon that we use, and the wafer is typically a millimeter. So you're making more efficient utilization of the silicon. So if you look at a silicon integrated circuit you build on a conventional wafer that's a millimeter thick, all the action is at the surface. There's not that much happening from an electronic standpoint down into the depth of the silicon. The reason why they make it a millimeter thick is so that a robot can move it around without breaking it.
John Rogers. Now, let's be specific. Swimmer Ian Thorpe has just had a shoulder operation and it's become infected. He's on a massive dose of antibiotics and we hope he'll recover and won't lose the full use of his arm. But what if instead he'd been given one of those electroceuticals, which then acts later to dissolve away and disappear? Here's how.
So silicon dissolves in biofluids at about a rate of 1 nanometer per day. So just a few atoms per day will disappear. So if you take a silicon wafer, the standard platform for integrated circuits, you put that in water, you're not going to notice any change over many, many years. But if you take these very thin silicon membranes, you put those in water, they can disappear completely by that kind of reaction chemistry just in 2 or 3 weeks. And the reaction product is naturally found in biofluids. It's part of a recommended daily diet. It's completely benign in a biological sense. So not only does it dissolve in biofluids, but it's biocompatible as well. And so that provides a core foundation for a whole electronics and sensor technology that's bioresorbable.
Could you give us an outline of the devices that these systems will serve?
You know, there's two classes of devices, biointegrated electronics, transient electronics. Let me say a couple of words about transient electronics because I think that is much different than anything that's out there today. Both of them are, but I think that opens up conceptually new opportunities. And what we like to think about in the case of transient electronics for the body is the notion of an electroceutical. So if you think about the way the pharmaceutical approach to disease prevention or disease treatment works, it's basically a chemical compound that goes into the body, has an effect on biological processes, but over time is usually expelled or metabolized or disappears. And what we think is there may be an analogy to that kind of mode of intervention in the world of electronics. And we think that that could open up fundamentally new ways to treat disease. So one specific example that we've looked at is an electroceutical applique, a very thin sheet of this transient electronics designed to mitigate surgical site infections. So if you look at the incidence for readmission into a hospital, somebody comes in for a surgery, a lot of times that readmission is driven by a bacterial infection that develops at the site of the surgery due to, you know, imperfect sterilization or some kind of contamination bacteria that gets introduced into the body during the surgery. And that kind of infection usually develops within 2 weeks of the surgery. If you have to go back in, that means another operation, additional risk to the patient. Some of those infections can be treated with drugs, so a pharmaceutical approach, but more and more they're seeing these bacteria become antibiotic resistant. And in that case, it would be valuable to have a non-pharmaceutical approach, something that does not rely on antibiotics. And so what we've developed, just as an initial example of what you can do with this concept of electroceutical, is a patch, a thin sheet of electronics that the surgeon places in the body. This is the vision, just been demonstrated on animal models at this point. It goes into the body at the site of the surgery, just before the patient is closed up. So it resides next to the wound site. And it provides a wireless coupling scheme to create localized heating at levels that can sort of sterilize or kill bacteria colonies that may be forming. So you can light the device up if you need to, if an infection has happened. But in that context, you don't want the device to stay around forever. Otherwise, the surgeon would have to go in and remove it to eliminate unnecessary device load on the body. But that additional surgery could cause a source of an infection itself. So this is not a good situation you want to get into. So instead, we make the device in this transient format. And we engineer the material so the lifetime is about 2 weeks. And that's coincident with the highest period of risk for the patient. So the device goes in. If there's an infection, you light it up, you use it to kill the bacteria. If there isn't an infection, or even if there is one and you've eliminated it, once the patient is beyond that critical 2 week period, the wound is typically healed and the incidence for infection go down dramatically. And so at that point, the device just gradually resorbs into the body over the course of a couple months.
It sounds affordable.
So I'm an academic. We focus on new ideas, new materials, demonstrating concepts. We do have a small exploratory startup venture that's looking at commercial opportunities because we think that's important. If we can do things in the lab and get them out into the real world, then that's what we want to do. It has to move into the commercial world, and some of the activity at the company then involves costing out, you know, these kinds of devices. But I would say that because we're using silicon and we're using fabrication procedures that are not too dissimilar from those that are used for mainstream electronics, our hope and our anticipation is that we'll be able to leverage that existing manufacturing structure to allow cost-effective fabrication of transient electronics with very sophisticated options in terms of performance. So one of the things that we've done over the last 6 months is to demonstrate how you can take an existing foundry fabrication facility that might be used to make microprocessors for laptop computers and modify it at a modest level in terms of materials replacements, slight tweaks in the way that the processing is done, so that at the end of that manufacturing line, out comes transient electronic devices, where I would say halfway through modifying and demonstrating that modified flow that would enable that vision for manufacturing. But I think it's critically important because unless these things are affordable, they're never going to be widely used. So we think a lot about manufacturing and cost and materials and try to do everything in a way that's aligned with an established infrastructure so that a new startup company doesn't have to build a foundry fab. It's, you know, $3, $4 billion capital investment required to make that happen. So I would say it this way. If your transient electronics is not well aligned with mainstream manufacturing in the integrated circuit industry, it's going to be a tough road to make that commercially viable.
At Tufts University, they're doing work on using electrical fields to regrow tissues and maybe even organs. How do you know that your devices won't interfere with the electricity of the body and in that way perhaps create a problem?
Yeah, I mean, these are all very, very important issues. I mean, we're looking to exploit electric fields to affect desired responses, but the flip side of that is what you're referring to, is how do you avoid adverse effects? And, you know, biology is complicated. So if you want to do anything inside the body, there's a very rigorous regulatory process you have to go through to look for these kinds of side effects. So the point is you can engineer the electronics such that it only interacts with the surrounding biology at well-defined points, in well-defined ways. That's what you can control at the engineering level, and I'm an engineer. Now, having said that, biology is sufficiently complex that you might not be able to anticipate all of the modes of interaction, and that's why you go through animal trials and human clinical trials to explore those and make sure that they're not problematic. But I think electrical fields and electrical current stimulation is a critically important way for electronics to interact with the body. And there's all kinds of things that are already out there in widespread use: cardiac pacemaker, cochlear implants, peripheral nerve stimulators, bone growth stimulators, all sorts of stuff that are present in non-resorbable forms now that we think we can, you know, re-engineer with these bioresorbable materials to add new expanded modes of use for those kind of well-established, known ways for interacting between, say, electric fields and biology.
That's the ambition. John Rogers is Professor of Materials Science and Engineering at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He was at the AAAS in Chicago. The Science Show on RN.